The BBC presents My Word. And here to introduce the programme and the panel is Jack Longland.
My Word is a word game played by people whose business is words, and those taking part are Dillis Powell, Frank Muir, Anne Scott James, and John Wells. And here's round one to test their respective vocabularies. For possible 2 marks each, I want you to give me the meaning of these words. We begin with Dillis Powell. Dillis Powell, what is a pea jacket? P-E-A hyphen jacket. A pea jacket.
P-E-A?
Yeah.
It's something you wear in the Navy.
Why? And what is it?
It's a short jacket.
Very short jacket.
Double
buttons on it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Blue.
Yeah.
And when chaps were standing looking over the taffrail, you put your hands in the pockets with the thumbs outside the pockets. I don't know why they did that. They always just stand.
I'll give you 2 marks. It's a short, stout overcoat, originally of coarse woolen cloth, which is worn or used to be worn by sailors. Now, John Wells. John, what is a cutworm? C-U-T and worm, all put together in one word. Cutworm.
A half-cut worm is a worm reeling about from the effects of gin and tonic. So, a cut worm, I should think, was probably an inebriate caterpillar.
Common garden pest.
It is a caterpillar. You've got
good.
Bit right.
Oh, good. So, if it's what would it cut?
Yes. So what does it cut?
All sorts of things. Plants, flowers.
Really?
Vegetables? Yes.
Well, it just cuts them through and they fall over.
Yes. That's jolly
good. We found it. It's a caterpillar that cuts through cabbages, vegetables and large pine trees, which then immediately fall over.
By a series of miracles, you've got, sir. It's 2 marks it is. This is a particular kind, a caterpillar that cuts off young plants level with the ground, and it does cut cabbages, and also, I believe, maize, and sometimes, if it's very bold, melons. And the most usual kind lives in the United States, as you'd expect, and is the larva of a species of moth called Agrotis. 2 marks. Anne Scott James, what is nacre? N-A-C-R-E.
Well, it's French for mother of pearl, I think.
That'll do.
I can't sort of be...
Or the shellfish, which I believe is called pinner, or the sea pen that yields mother of pearl, or it can be the lining of so many different seashells. You've got this iridescent shining substance just inside them, but mainly mother of pearl. 2 marks. Frank Mill, this is a very difficult word to say, and I'll do my best. What is dyspnea? D-Y-S-P-N-O-E-A, dyspnea.
Something revolting, I bet.
It isn't very nice. Oh, it isn't much fun.
It's like pyrrhea, isn't it? Like pyrrhea.
No, I think you're
eating a pie backwards.
Off scent,
it's Greek.
Yes, it's
half a mark.
No, not breathing. No, it's not breathing. It's difficulty in breathing.
You've got it. You're absolutely.
I got that.
It's difficulty in breathing. Yeah, that's right.
When you said the word, I got it.
Well done between you.
Difficulty in breathing.
Dyspnea is difficulty of breathing, and it's, again, 2 Greek words, deus meaning bad, and pnea, which means breathing, which means painfully breathing, which is a rather sad thing to be. 2 marks. Well, round two is a round of books which happen to have place name titles. And so for 2 marks, when I give the following titles, can you give me the name of the author or the dramatist concerned? We begin with Dillis Powell, and yours is Magnolia Street.
By Louis Golding.
That's right. Louis or Louis Golding, I never know which it is. A novel. John Wells, Canary Row.
John Steinbeck.
Yes, 2 marks. Anne Scott James, Sinister Street.
Oh, Compton Mackenzie.
Yes, 2 marks again. Frank Muir, Quality Street.
Good. Oh, it's on the tip of my tongue. Chewing it. It's a play. Barry, J.M. Barry.
James Barry, Sir James Barry, a play, in this case, Quality Street. A character called Phoebe in it. We go on to a round of clichés. For 3 marks, can you tell me what the following pretty well-known examples mean? That's the first point. And where they originally came from? That's the second. Tell us, Powell, to turn a blind eye to.
Well, it means that you know something is going on, but you're not going to say so or admit it.
And what kind of thing is normally going on?
Well, something rather deplorable.
Yes, and what's it come from?
Well, I think it came from Nelson.
And tell us what Nelson was doing.
Nelson didn't see something rather... didn't see the signal which said don't attack.
Yes, do you remember where he did it?
Battle of Copenhagen.
Well done. Jolly good. 3 marks it is. Turn a blind eye to something, pretend not to see something so that something else, illicit or unconstitutional or just plain naughty, can be carried out. And Nelson, at the Battle of Copenhagen, he had his attention drawn to a signal. We really weren't at war with the Danes. And he put his telescope deliberately to his blind eye and declared that he couldn't see the signal because he didn't want to see it. 3 marks. All right, on to John Wells. Unwept, unhonoured, and unsung.
If, for example, you go on a stage and tell a joke and nobody laughs, that is called in the theatre dying the death.
Mm-hmm.
And if you then drag off the stage and nobody claps, the critics write the next morning, he left unwept, unhonoured, and unsung. I mean, it's just a way of saying he was an unpleasant and uninteresting person.
Yes, I think that'll do. And do you know where it comes from?
Yes, I do, because I learnt it at school.
Well, tell other chaps.
sir, I remember now. It's the lay of the last minstrel.
Yes,
that's right. Exactly what it is. And the lay in the sense of the word poem or song. And he returned to the earth from which he sprung.
Yes.
And wept and honoured and unsung. And that's Walter Scott.
You're a very clever boy.
Thank you very much indeed.
3 marks it is. This usually refers to the death of somebody. It might refer to an actor, I quite agree, who was simply passed without notice, has been completely ignored. And in the lay of the last minstrel, Scott wrote, despite those titles, power and pelf, the wretch consented all in self, living shall forfeit fair renown, and doubly dying shall go down to the vile dust from whence he sprung, unwept, unhonoured, and unsung. And Scott James, in blissful ignorance.
Well, it means you don't know something and the thing is unpleasant, so you're very fortunate for you not to know it.
Yes. And where does it come from?
Now, any help on this?
Well, there used to be that radio programme called Ignorance is Bliss.
That helps. You're quite right.
Where ignorance is bliss, 'tis folly to be wise.
That's right.
It's a distant prospect of Eton College.
By?
By, Not black, is it? It's not
yes,
black. Is it grey?
Yes, you've got it. Well done. You fought your way home. In blissful ignorance means, as Anne said, you're going ahead innocently and possibly happily because you're too ignorant to have the fears and anxieties you ought to have with a particular course of action, just like a child might have. And it is from Thomas Gray's Ode on a Distant Prospect of Eton College, where he says they don't know what they're in for, poor things, later on in life. Now, Frank Noah, a poor thing but mine own.
A frank kind of statement. What, what was the question?
Well, I want to know... I want to know in what circumstances you'd use, if you did use this phrase, and
well,
where it comes from.
I wouldn't use it, because it isn't an accurate quotation.
Good.
It comes from, As You Like It, Touchstone, and it's an ill-favoured thing, sir, but mine own. And that's the origin, and it's used to mean, it's a sort of modest remark, isn't it?
Yes, this is a misquotation. The Touchstone, with Audrey on his arm, and Audrey is the rustic maiden, says to the courtier, Jaques, I think it was, an ill-favoured thing, sir, but mine own. But it's usually quoted in the simpler form, a poor thing, but mine own. An hour round about writers and their pen names. And 2 marks again if I get the correct answers back at me. Who, de Lespau, is the French novelist Amandine Lucille Aurore Dupin, sometimes called Baronne du Devon? And what's she better known as?
Edgar Wallace.
Amandine. Amandine Lucille Aurore Dupin, D-U-P-I-N.
Good heavens, she's French.
Yeah, very French.
Pray heavens, she is. Is she alive?
No.
Could it be Georges Sand?
You're absolutely right. Well done. Georges Sand, or George Sand, whichever you prefer, the friend of Alfred de Musset and Frédéric Chopin, and this was her original name, but she wrote under the name Georges Sand. John Wells, whose pen name is Robert Markham, and whom did he take over from?
Oh, yes. One fat Englishman. One fat Kingsley Amis is the answer.
Yes.
And he chose that name because he took over from Fleming, Ian Fleming, to write a sequel to the Bond books that was called Colonel Sun.
Yes, quite right. 2 marks.
Thank you very much.
And Scott James. Who is Mary Ann Cross, better known as? She was born Mary Ann Evans, but most of her life she was known as Mary Ann Cross. And what's she better known as in writing?
George Eliot, I should tell
you. That's right, yes. She lived most of her life with a very nice chap called G.H. Lewis, which rather shocked the Victorians. But just at the end of her life, in 1880, she married the Mr. J.W. Cross, but died the same year as her marriage, as she finished up as Mrs. Cross. And now, Frank Muir, under what pen name did Marie-Louise de la Ramee, R-A-M-E-E, with an acute accent on the first E, what did she write under in the way of a pen name?
But under a great strain. We've rather used up our lady French novelist. Well, is she in fact a lady French novelist?
Well, she was French in origin. She wrote in this country rather than there.
She did it.
And she once wrote, or something like it, they all rode fast, but nobody rode faster than Stroke.
Oh, Ouida. It means, yes, father, if you have a French father and a Welsh mother.
I think 1.5, because I gave a rather essential clue there. Marie-Louise de la Ramee, which was a rather grand name, because her father was just called Louis Ramee, with one E, didn't write all her novels, which were novels of fashionable life, under this pen name of Ouida. And this was simply the result of a childish mispronunciation of her own name of Louise, and it stuck around afterward. Well, now a round of more or less humorous quotations from famous writers, and I want you to tell me from the style of the quotation who wrote it. 3 marks if you can get the writer without any help. But if you get a bit baffled, we will supply clues in the form of rhyming couplets made up by the compiler of this program in case you're stumped. And if I have to help you in that way, you only get 2 marks rather than 3. So you get rid of 2 shots. Beginning with Dillis Powell, unprovided with original learning, unformed in the habits of thinking, unskilled in the arts of composition, I resolved to write a book.
Well, English.
Yes.
English, not French.
Result of that book.
It can't have been Bunyan, because he couldn't have written like that.
It sounds like Sterne. Is it Sterne?
It's the same sort of... it's certainly the same century, not very far apart in age, too. No,
a bit later.
And finished on Lake Geneva.
Gibbon.
What was he writing?
He was writing The Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire.
Another damn thick scribble.
Yes. Scribble. He was scribble, scribble, Mr. Gibbon.
I've been rather naughty. I gave you the wrong clue.
Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire.
I should have to give you 2 out of 3 because I did help. This is the opening of his great history, Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire. 2 marks. John Wells. Here lies my wife. Here let her lie. Now she's at rest, and so am I.
Was it Monsieur Récamier?
That's a good idea. Lovely idea, but no, I don't think so.
He's presumably the husband of a rather noisy wife. I suppose it could be Mr. Siddons.
I think I'll give you the clue, John. You're getting...
Very kind of you, I'd appreciate it.
For such cruel words about his spouse, he should have had a Haydn, this 17th century dramatist and poet named...
Well, he couldn't be Pope. I'm afraid it must be Dryden. I'm yes. Sorry about my ignorance.
Dryden it is. 2 marks out of 3. John Dryden, very unkindly, wrote this. It's an epitaph intended for his wife. I don't think it was ever used as such. It would have been a bit too unkind still.
It's rather a nice image, him kneeling on her tombstone, chipping it out.
Quietly. John Dryden it is. Anne Scott James. Doctors pour drugs, of which they know little, to cure diseases, of which they know less, into human beings, of whom they know nothing. It wasn't written originally in this language.
Oh.
It could be the French dramatist.
Voltaire.
Yes, well done. Oh. 3 marks straight away. Now, Frank Muir, there is hardly a person in the House of Commons worth painting, though many of them would be better for a little whitewashing.
I was hoping I'd get P.G. Woodhouse. Is it a painter?
No, not a painter, no. A painter quarrelled with him.
Oh, Oscar Wilde.
Yes. Now around about dogs. Dogs in fiction and drama. What I shall do is to give the name of the dog, and for 2 marks I want you to tell me the title and author of the work in which the particular dog appears. And we begin with Dilys Power, and your dog is Nana. N-A-N-A.
Nana is in...
Emil Zola.
James Baer. It's, Peter Pan. It's in Peter Pan.
Nana is the Newfoundland dog which acted as nurse to the children of the Darling family in the book and later the play Peter Pan by James Barry. 2 marks it is. John Wells, Flush.
That's the name of the dog, is it?
Yes.
yes. I have a dim memory. There is somebody called Flush.
He sent his owner clean around the bend.
It used to lie on the sofa.
What did it lie on the sofa in? My colleague suggests... Yes, you're quite right.
Virginia Woolf or Elizabeth Barrett Browning.
It was Elizabeth Barrett Browning.
Yes. Do you remember what work this dog appeared in?
Is it the Dentists of Wimpole Street?
Yes. Author.
Haven't we got that?
Oh, Robert something.
Nearly. Not quite. 1.5. Flush was Elizabeth Browning's dog, and in the play, it's the play of the Barretts of Wimpole Street. It was written by Rudolf Bezier. But this was not a fictional dog, only it was a real dog. It was a golden cocker spaniel given to Elizabeth Barrett by her very great friend, Miss Mitford. And it has a biography of its own, written by Virginia Woolf. Now it's Anne Scott James's turn. Anne Asta, A-S-T-A.
Oh, did they come in that Nick and Charles film?
Yes.
The Thin Man films.
Yes.
It was a dear little terrier. That's used right. To help them go snuff, snuff, snuff and find out all the...
Do you remember who wrote The Thin Man?
Snuffing out the murderers. Dashiell Hammett, was
that's
it?
Right, quite right.
Very good.
2 marks it is. Asta was the dog, and it was a fox terrier, though I think, again, it had to be changed quite often because there were film after film, and the original novel was The Thin Man by Dashiell Hammett. Now, Frank Muir, Bullseye.
Bullseye was the Bill Sykes, wasn't it? Yes, it was the nasty... Bull Mastiff or something, wasn't it, in Oliver Twist?
Quite right.
Bill Sykes' dog.
Bill Sykes, the thief and eventually murderer of Nancy in Oliver Twist and Charles Dickens, Pretty nasty dog, a shaggy mongrel. And Bilsack's tried to kill it on one occasion, and in the end it died with him by jumping off the roof when he got hanged. 2 marks. Last round of lines from the poets. And in the following examples, concerning what was which poet or dramatist writing?
And where was he standing?
Dillis Powell, stern daughter of the voice of God.
It's Wordsworth.
Yes?
Wordsworth.
And what was he writing about?
Duty.
Well done.
Daffodils.
Who marks? It's William Wordsworth's Ode to Duty. O Duty, if that name thou love, who art a light to guide, a rod to check the erring and reprove. Now, John Wells. Oh, it offends me to the soul to hear a robustious, periwig-pated fellow tear a passion to tatters, to very rags, to split the ears of the groundlings.
Well, it doesn't rhyme, does it?
No.
Laurence Olivier's. Wonderful moment. In The Merry Wives of Macbeth. he plays Hamlet and he's tearing a strip off his actors for getting their lines wrong.
Yep, that'll do.
Well, if you'll take that, you'll take anything.
It's Shakespeare's Hamlet, and he is telling the actors how he wants the play within the play played. 2 marks. And Scott James. It's very hard to say, but I'll do my best. St, there's Vespers. Plena Gratia, Avi Virgo, grrr, you swine.
Yes, I know.
Something being witty in Latin and English.
It can't be. It's not an ordinary poem in the normal sense of the word, is it?
Could you say it again?
Sorry. St, there's Vespers. Plena Gratia, Avi Virgo, grrr, you swine.
Isn't it from There Was a Young Lady of Cirencester?
Home Thoughts from Abroad.
It's one of those long, boring poems by Browning about cardinals. And yes, it's called The Sicilian Vespers by Arthur Browning.
You're doing terribly.
Thank you very much.
Again, half a mark, I think. This is Robert Browning, soliloquy of the Spanish cloister, and the monk who talks has a particular enemy who's also in the same monastery, and he's ranting on about both his heresy and his general unpleasantness, hence this sort of grrr, you swine. Half a mark. Frank Muir, who, according to whom, slept under the dresser, when that began to pall, slept in the hall.
Is it Edward Lear?
No, it's a contemporary, roughly.
Edward Confessor.
It's Edward the Confessor.
Yes, that's right.
He's not a contemporary. He's dead. Edward the Confessor.
Slept out of the dress and that began to call.
That's
him.
Right.
In the hall.
Oh, it's a Clerihue.
Yes.
Edward Clerihue Bentley.
Well done, you get your 2 marks.
Nick's dad.
Edmund Clerihue Bentley wrote Biography for Beginners, which is a series of these little four-lined rhymes. Edward the Confessor slept under the dresser. When that began to pour, slept in the hall. And he also wrote, What I Like About Clive is that he's no longer alive. There's a great deal to be said for being dead.
And that's one about Cecil B. DeMille, much against his will, was persuaded to keep Moses out of the Wars of the Roses.
Well, that, I think, is a fitting ending to the contest, because this evening's battle is won by 1 mark by Dillis Powell and Frank Muir from the other team of Anne Scott James and John Wells. And that brings to an end this edition of My Word.
In My Word, you heard Dillis Powell, Anne Scott James, Frank Muir and John Wells, introduced by Jack Longland. The program was devised by Tony Schwan and Edward J. Mason and presented by the BBC.